Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Jetzt ist Herbst und bald stehen schon wieder die Feiertage vor der Tür. Das kann auch für Hunde ganz schön stressig sein. Viele Vierbeiner reagieren unter anderem mit einer gestörten Verdauung. Und das ist wiederum Stress für ihre Besitzer. Aber es gibt schnelle und einfache Hilfe. Das Probiotikum Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Streu einfach einen Beutel über das tägliche Futter. Die außergewöhnliche Zusammensetzung mit lebenden, guten Darmbakterien stellt das Gleichgewicht im Darm wieder her. Natürlich kannst du ProPlan Fortiflora auch präventiv oder bei alltäglichen Verdauungsbeschwerden einsetzen. Es unterstützt auch bei Ernährungsumstellungen oder Antibiotikaeinnahme. Purina ProPlan Fortiflora. Jetzt auf shop.purina.de.
Just what is this main artery of the information superhighway?
Good evening. Nelson Mandela is free.
Nirvana.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Y'all ready for this?
The 90s. A decade of new technology, new music, and breaking of cultural barriers. But we want to tell you a different story about how one photo and one World Cup changed the trajectory of football for women across the globe.
Even though there were over 90,000 people, I just felt like it was silent.
You're at the halfway line when it starts, and it's a long way down to the PK spot.
But something in my mind said, look. I heard the word look, almost like a divine intervention, if you will.
It was one of the most remarkable experiences of my life.
The word epic is used way too much, but that really was an epic moment.
The future of women's football or soccer is dependent upon the U.S. women's team winning the World Cup. Took a deep breath and waited for the whistle. And the next thing you know, the stadium erupted.
July 10th, 1999, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. 90,000 people witness history, including me. I was at home watching with my mom and dad in my living room in New Jersey, just 14 years old, probably getting ready for my own football training. I'm Heather O'Reilly, former USA player, World Cup winner in 2015, and three-time Olympic gold medalist. This is World Football from the BBC World Service, and this is the story of the 99ers, the World Cup winners who inspired a nation, and the celebration that catapulted Brandi Chastain to stardom in the most famous photograph in women's football. We're just outside New York at the Red Bull Arena, where thousands of fans have gathered for a final peek at Team USA as they play a friendly against Mexico before heading to Paris for the 2024 Olympics. The atmosphere is electric as anticipation builds for the arrival of their new coach, Emma Hayes, and the star-studded USA squad. But the excited fans are not just here to see the current team.
The carpet out there for women and in all sports. I mean, they fought so hard to be recognized, show who they are.
25 years ago, women's football experienced a transformation thanks to its own superstars, dubbed the 99ers, who led the U.S. women's national soccer team to the 1999 FIFA Women's World Cup final. And this party atmosphere is to celebrate the whole squad being reunited for the first time. To really understand the immensity of what the 99ers achieved that day, we have to go right back to the start of the decade.
The big sports in the U.S. at that time were NFL, NFL, and NFL. Hello, I'm Kelly Whiteside. I'm a longtime sports reporter. In terms of the last 50 years of women's sports in this country, the first major tipping point is the passage of Title IX in 1972. Basically, it mandated equal opportunities for girls and women. It wasn't specifically geared towards sports, but it was has been applied over the years, over the decades, to if you have a boys soccer team in your town, you need to have a girls soccer team in your town. So any institution, school receiving federal funds must provide equal opportunities. So that's why it was so applied to the school system and the college system.
The U.S. team's first success was winning the 1999 Women's World Championship for the M&M Trophy in China. Wow, quite the title. Michelle Akers was the hero with two goals as they beat Norway 2-0, but it didn't get the reaction that they had hoped for.
When the women's soccer team won the 1991 World Cup in China, really the U.S. did not take notice at all. The only coverage I remember was the scorecard item in Sports Illustrated. ESPN, if it was even around, I can't even recall, was in its infancy. So there was not this type of national coverage of the event.
1999 World Cup winner Brandi Chastain recalls how difficult it was to even see any football on TV as a child.
I watched so little football because I didn't have access, right? So I think about my father becoming my coach when I was 7 or 8. He never played football. He never watched football. He didn't know anything about it. And so we went to the library. We got the 4 books that they had. We got the 1 VHS tape, Pelé, Beckenbauer, Canalia, George Best, you know, some of the world leaders in football who had exhausted their, you know, their European ties came to America. I was transfixed. It made me want more. And I found one program on the television every Sunday called Soccer Made in Germany. And I watched that over and over.
1995 would be very different. The first official FIFA World Cup in Sweden.
In 1995, the semifinal game between U.S. and Norway was a much anticipated event. What happened early in the game is the team's best player, you know, everybody thinks of Mia Hamm, but when I look back at that time, the most dominant player in the world was Michelle Akers. She was a force in the middle of the midfield. She was a force with her head, and she was physical, and she was kind of the emotional driver of that team. And she went out of the game really early in the game on a collision going up for a head ball. And she came down, not only was she probably concussed, but she came down awkwardly on her knee and left the game. And I clearly remember when that happened, saying to myself, they are going to have a really hard time winning this game without Michelle Akers. Because Norway was such a physical team, they needed sort of her presence in the midfield to do that. Ultimately, what had happened is they lost on a really tough goal. It was really close. Brianna Scurry, the goalkeeper, was within inches of stopping the ball. So they lost 1-0. And I have never seen a team so devastated at the end of a game.
Despite losing the World Cup, it did attract attention back home. But for the players, they were heartbroken. For 99ers goalkeeper Brianna Scurry, the devastation of losing to fierce rivals Norway in the semifinal remains in her memory like it was only yesterday.
It was so heartbreaking for me because I knew it was going to happen and it happened anyway. And I just missed the ball, flighted ball from the corner kick by literally an inch, if not less than that. And so That was a game that I will always remember. I mean, we hit the crossbar and both posts, and we were just not able to get past Bente Nordby at the time, who was the goalkeeper, who was phenomenal on that day. And I remember watching Norway celebrate, and they did this thing called the train where they grab each other's legs and they crawl at midfield. And I remember looking at that and burning that image into my head, even though it really hurt.
The loss to Norway in 1995 lit a fire in the U.S. team that burned on. A year later, USA got their revenge over Norway. It was a groundbreaking moment with women's football debuting at the Olympic Games in Atlanta, 96. USA beat Norway in the semis and China in the final. The USA flag was flying high again. For one player, winning Olympic gold was a poignant moment. After the disappointment of missing out on the World Cup squad in 95, Chastain played every single match in the USA's run to Olympic gold in 1996.
Another residual effect of the impact of 1995 and that World Cup and how it impacted the 1999 World Cup was the fact that Brandi Chastain was not on that 1995 team. Brandi Chastain was cut from that team by then coach Tony DiCicco, and that fueled her drive to get back to 1999.
In 1999, the United States hosted the FIFA World Cup for the first time in the competition's history. But this tournament felt different. It was more than the U.S. getting revenge of their Scandinavian rivals. It was about the future of women's football in the U.S. Here's 99er Brandi Chastain.
This was a World Cup that was not supposed to happen like this. It was not supposed to be in big stadiums. It was, you know, FIFA had historically in 1995 put the tournament in small stadiums in Sweden. And it was a great World Cup, excellent. But, you know, when the World Cup committee here in the U.S. got its hands on knowing that it would be hosting a World Cup, they said, we and they together said, we're going to do this big and the way it should be done. And which meant that we had to put it from coast to coast, north to south, in all of our big arenas, basically, you know, the places that people historically have gone to watch sports. We were pushing and shaking hands and kissing babies and doing clinics. And, you know, we were working very hard to make sure that we could fill the stadiums, because that would be obviously the number one bullet point for FIFA to say, yes, see, women's football can't do this. And so we wanted to show that we could do this and that we could fill these stadiums, no matter if it was a U.S. game or not. We would say on one hand, we're going to fill the stadiums. And then on the other side, we'd be like, oh my gosh, can we fill these stadiums? And so we went to work.
The 90s was a decade where advertising and magazines and TV commercials were king. And the 99ers made sure to tap into that magic ahead of the World Cup to boost their exposure. Journalist Kelly Whiteside.
I think one of the main factors of why this team also became so familiar to so many Americans is not only did they see them during the games, but they saw them on commercials. Mia Hamm most famously was in a commercial with Michael Jordan.
I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
So if we think of U.S. sports in the 90s, Michael Jordan is number one, right? He was the number one athlete in the country, if not the world at that point. And the fact that she was in a Be Like Mike commercial was extraordinary. And she was featured in so many, this Pert hair commercial ad, which her teammates endlessly made fun of her because she would, you know, shake her luxurious hair. And the last thing Mia Hamm wants is to be the center of anybody's attention because of her personality. She would rather reflect the attention to her teammates, but she was the it girl. In addition to the commercials, they were featured on late night television. So they were all over the place during that summer of 1999.
On the 19th of June, 1999, the U.S. arrived at their first game against Denmark. Would the fans turn up? How many would be there in Giant Stadium to see them play? These were all questions asked as USA goalkeeper Brianna Scurry explains.
So we were rolling up on the highway and it was so much traffic. And if you've ever been on, you know, the parkway in New York and New Jersey, you know the traffic can be horrible, especially going to a game. And so we were thinking, what is going on? Why are there so many cars on the highway right now? I mean, we thought we were only going to have our game out here at the Meadowlands because there's multiple facilities out there. So we were like, who's having a game at the same time as us? what is going on? And then we were looking at the cars as we were driving by on the shoulder, and we saw, like, Go USA, and little girls in the cars with the pigtails and their faces painted, and we were like, oh, this is for us. Legitimately had no idea. And so we were like, oh my gosh, so awesome. Now we go from angry to awesome, right? And we were excited, and we were going into the parking lot, and all these kids are running beside the bus and waving and taking pictures, and we're waving at them and taking pictures, and it was so cool. It was just a phenomenal feeling. And then we were like, okay, we got to get serious. Now that we've got the people here showing up for this game, we got to do the business. And sure enough, we did.
The team played in front of packed stadiums across the country, beginning with a crowd of over 78,000 at Giants Stadium. And I was one of them. I went to that match with my club teammates, the East Brunswick Dynamite. We were so excited to go to the game together, knock the ball around in the parking lot before the game, have some hot dogs, and just enjoy being together. And the team gave us a show, winning 3-0 against Denmark. I remember a goal that Mia Hamm scored that was absolutely incredible. It gave me goosebumps. That victory set a tone for the entire tournament as the U.S. team fought their way past five teams, all the way to a sellout crowd of over 90,000 people at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena on July 10th.
We're at the Rose Bowl. You know, we come in and we see all the cars surrounding, and honestly, I think it blew our minds. I feel like in our gut, we knew that people would show up because they had been showing up, but you just don't know until you get there. And even today, like I get chills thinking of how important the fans were, the fact that they showed up for this historical moment.
You might have thought that the U.S. team would be warming up on the pitch, adjusting to the vastness of the crowd, and familiarizing themselves with the stadium. After all, they were roughly 2 hours away from the most defining moment of their careers. But unusually for a World Cup, Brazil and Norway were playing the third-place game right before the final on the same pitch, which meant a warm-up in the cramped corridors of the stadium. Goalkeeper Brianna Scurry.
We warmed up underneath in the roads of the stadium, in the bowels of the stadium, you know, where you see, like, all this construction and all these trucks and everything on the concrete. That's where we warmed up because they had the third place game before us, and they went into overtime and they went into penalty kicks. So they didn't give us any time on the pitch for the final. No time on the pitch. And I'm like, what is going on? But we made it work. We were in the same boat as China, and somehow we managed to pull it off anyway.
99er, Brandi Chastain.
You know, we did what we always do. We become flexible and agile, and we realize, okay, this is not going to be the ideal or perfect situation. We're not getting on the field. We're going to run in circles in the small locker room. We're going to run up and down the corridor in the hallway. And this is a historical stadium. It's very old. It's the water's dripping from the ceiling, the mildew, you can smell it. It's like, you know, it's dark, it's dank, it's lit, it's perfect. And this just became like another one of those opportunities for us to embrace and say, let's go.
Miss Jennifer Lopez!
Not quite yet, Brandi. Just before kickoff, spectators were treated to a performance from pop star Jennifer Lopez, who opened the final by performing and filming the music video for her song, Let's Get Loud.
Here we go.
Let's get loud. Let's get loud.
We heard zero of J-Lo, and so it was a phenomenal show, but we didn't see any of it. But we heard about it. We heard it was pretty cool from our friends and family.
That day on July 10th, I really felt like I was part of history. It was a day that I will never forget. I watched in my living room with my mom and dad, decked out in USA gears, wearing my Umbro shorts, having that Snapple iced tea in my hand, After all, it was boiling hot in New Jersey that summer. And the task to capture it all in film fell on the shoulders of a photographer from California.
Hi, my name is Robert Beck. I'm a sports photographer based in the United States. And one of my most famous pictures is the shot of Brandi Chastain during the 1999 World Cup. When we worked at Sports Illustrated, we frequently got assistants to help us out. And I got a friend who was a friend of an editor at the magazine, and he was women's soccer coach down here at a community college in San Diego. And I figured, you know, Todd would probably like to go see this game. Called him up and got him on board, and we drove up there. And it was a gorgeous day, a little warm, but bright blue skies. So when I got there, when Todd and I got there, and we saw how many people were there, I was kind of surprised. I mean, it still didn't hit me how important an event it was.
But as the clock ticked to 90 minutes, no side had scored. The game moved into 30 minutes of extra time. The team's veteran star player, Michelle Akers, took a knock and went out of the game with concussion and exhaustion. It was a big blow for the U.S. Brandi Chastain.
Gosh, I think back to the first time I knew about the women's national team, Michelle Akers' name was spoken. And so, you know, she obviously was, as that central component, kind of that hub for our team, she was vital. But what was vital was that every person as a player knew that they were important. You know, we had someone in Atisha Venturini who could do things that Michelle couldn't do. And because of that, we would adjust and we would move forward. So, you know, we were not indispensable, but we were flexible.
China almost won it 10 minutes into extra time when Young Ji's header got beyond goalkeeper Brianna Scurry and was going in. But a heroic header from Christine Lilly on the line kept USA's hopes alive. Since neither team scored by the end of extra time, the 1999 Women's World Cup final came down to a penalty shootout.
I asked Todd, I said, what are we going to do now? And he said, well, they'll go to penalty kicks to decide who the winner is. And I said, all right, well, you know, as soon as the game ends and they get ready for the penalty kicks, we will go down on the field. And he says, well, how are we going to do that? We didn't have credentials to get on the field. We didn't have bibs. We didn't have anything. And I said, no one's going to pay attention. And this is pre-9/11. So security was much more lax than it is now. I mean, we would never be able to accomplish this now. I said, all right, let's get our stuff and we'll go over to this one tunnel and we'll just walk on. And hopefully no one will be paying attention because they'll be getting ready for the penalty shots. And we did that. And sure enough, when we got to that tunnel and walked onto the field, so I looked around and there was nobody behind the net, behind the goal. And I said, well, let's just go there. And another photographer, he was from the Los Angeles Times, a newspaper, a very large newspaper. He comes by and he says, hey, can we shoot from in there? And I said, I don't know. You know, nobody's here. That's why we're here. And so he hopped over. And about a minute after he hopped over, a head security guard with a few of his cohort shows up and he says, you guys can't shoot from in there. That's why there's this double fence. And I said, oh, okay, well, and we were trying to get ready and we were, you know, gathering our stuff. We go to leave and the security guy says, stop, you know, don't move. They're about to start. It's too late. So just settle in. And during the whole penalty kick business, you can't move. You can't distract them. So you have to stay still where you are. It was, I don't know what you want to call it, right place at the right time.
The future of women's football or soccer is dependent upon the U.S. women's team winning the World Cup.
Overbeck, Fawcett, Lilly, Ham, Chastain, five penalty takers to make history. I'm sat watching in front of my TV with my parents as I watch Shi Hak-Kay for China score the first penalty. And I can remember feeling my heart pounding in my chest. Overbeck steps up to the line for the U.S.
Even though there were over 90,000 people, I just felt like it was silent. And I walked up, the ball was coming to me, I flicked it up with my foot to my hands, put it down on the spot, and was just hoping to God it would go in.
Overbeck strikes low and slides it past Gao Hong to make it 1-1. Overbeck gets the U.S. off to a winning start, but it does nothing to stop China's next penalty taker, as substitute Xu Haiyan also scores. Next for the U.S., Joy Fawcett against Gao Hong.
You're at the halfway line when it starts, and it's a long way down to the PK spot. I remember jogging slowly and just thinking in my head, oh my God, I hope these people cannot see my knees shaking right now.
Fawcett chips it over the keeper's head to make it 2-2. Brianna Scurry versus Ying for the third penalty.
On the first and second kickers, I didn't look at the player coming, but on the third kicker, as I was walking into the goal, there's actually video that you see me look at her as she's approaching, because something in my head said, look. I heard the word look in my head, and I looked at her, and I knew that was the one I was going to save.
Could this be it? Scurry looked Ying dead in the eyes. Scurry dives to the left and saves it. She roars to the crowd, pumping her arms up. I'm watching at home on my feet, screaming at the TV, running around the couches, hugging and dancing, screaming for Team USA. Then Christine Lilly walks up to the mark, her clearance off the line and extra time still fresh in my mind. The third penalty, she smashes it into the top left corner. The U.S. now have the advantage. China kept the pressure on, scoring their next two spot kicks, and poster girl Mia Hamm then also scores. That's 4 out of 5 after 90 minutes, extra time, and now penalties. The final had come down to Brandi Chastain, the fifth penalty taker, with what could be the match-winning kick.
Coming down to Brandy's kick, I mean, obviously it was the kick of the whole match, of the whole tournament. I knew it was going to be the moment of that game. And I had to make sure, you know, kind of concentrate on where my focus was going to be and be ready if she moved around a lot.
The head coach, Tony DiCicco, came over and he said, okay. He put his hand on my shoulder and I'll never forget that. And he said, you're going to take a penalty kick. And I said, yep. I talked to Lauren, no problem. I got it. And he said, well, you're going to take it left-footed. And then he ran, like he literally sped off. I've never taken a penalty with my left foot in a game before. Never in a match. And certainly not a World Cup final. And certainly not in front of 90,000 people. Took a deep breath and waited for the whistle. And as per Tony told me, I took it with my left foot. And the next thing you know, the stadium erupted.
I couldn't believe my eyes. Watching at home in my living room, I truly felt like I just lived through history. The United States are World Cup winners.
Brandi makes the kick, and it's kind of, I'm in a cocoon. I know that the stadium erupts. It just goes crazy, and you could probably hear it, you know, in the UK, the sound of 96,000 people, 97,000 people, whatever it was, cheering and going crazy. And of course, Brandi then going to her knees and tearing her jersey off and swirling it around, and the elation on her face.
You know, when I hit the kick, it felt so good. And then the eruption of the noise, I mean, I'm feeling chills all over, because the sights and the sound and the smell and the energy, you just never know how you'll react emotionally to a moment like that. That moment was insanity.
So at the end of the day, we gather up all our rolls of film. We put them in envelopes, and I remember asking one of our other photographers, Peter Reed Miller, and he was in one corner, and I kept saying, Peter, I'm not sure. I think I should, we would call it, push this film a half stop, or should I push it a stop? And
Peter is kind of angry. I mean, we were friends, but he knew that I had a better position being right behind the net than he did in the corner. And after a while, he just didn't want to hear anymore. He says, okay, just shut up and put it in the bag and, you know, mark whatever you want. He says, I don't even care. So there's no internet. So you can't, you know, an editor can't email me a picture or email me what the cover is going to look like. I get a call on Monday, probably to get my next assignment, and the same editor. I remember him saying, hey, you nailed the shot of Brandy scoring the winning kick. It's our cover this week, and it looks fabulous. And that was the extent of it. So on Thursday, I get my issue, and I looked, and I was kind of stunned because it was a better cover than I imagined. And this cover was just Brandy, and it was just one word. The word yes.
That Brandy Chastain penalty changed everything. It transformed the landscape of women's football. And for a 14-year-old like me, well, it changed everything. It truly inspired me that I wanted to be part of the U.S. Women's National Team. And 3 years later, that dream came true as I was called up to play with Mia Hamm and all those heroes that I watched that day.
The fact that it came down to Brandy Chastain was symmetry.
Journalist Kelly Whiteside.
Here's this player that had been cut from the 1995 team, you know, took this role as a defender, really made a difference in the World Cup for 1999. It wasn't Mia Hamm. It didn't come down to Mia Hamm. Michelle Akers at that point was back in the locker room with an IV in her arm. So I wasn't sure. I didn't know the order of the penalty kicks. So the fact that it came down to her and the way that she celebrated, and the fact that that image has become, in our country, one of the most iconic sports images of all time, that celebration of her on her knees, her fists in the air, her shirt off, is just an indelible moment in American sports history.
Real concrete changes started to take place from the success of 1999. The tournament opened up professional opportunities for football players. What once was a dream was now an occupation. Goalkeeper Brianna Scurry.
So the first WUSA league was definitely influenced by us. I mean, the original gentleman, John Hendricks, who owned Discovery Channel at the time, he saw us play. His daughter was a soccer player at the time. He actually lived not too far from where I live now, here in Bethesda, Maryland. And he got all his cable buddies together, and we talked about it, and they started the first league. The WUSA was all owned by cable company owners all over this country. And so that first 8-team league was basically the brainchild and the inspiration of the 99 World Cup. And so that was the first start of an iteration of a league that was professional for women's soccer here. And then, unfortunately, that league burned out in 2.5 seasons, but it started to set the groundwork for something that could happen. And we wanted a league for a long time. And a lot of us had gone and played in other countries, you know, in the off season, but we wanted a league of our own. And so that was the first time that we had that. At a high professional level. And I played in Atlanta and I absolutely loved it.
I think the impact of the 1999 World Cup is twofold. I think it really legitimized the place of women's sports in this country. It showed the potential of what women's sports can be in this country. It led to women's professional soccer leagues. And it also showed the fits and starts because it was a struggle. It's been a struggle for women's professional soccer in this country. So it wasn't a straight line up to success, but at least it was a launching point in terms of, you know, people will go and sit and watch and pay for professional women's leagues in this country. Its other impact is what it had on girls in this country and boys. It allowed girls to dream that this is what they can become. You know, all the players that came after the 99 team point to that moment in time, point to Mia Hamm, to Julie Foudy, to Michelle Aker, to Joy Fawcett to Christine Lilly to Brandi Chastain as their role models. They inspired them to become soccer players. And for generations, as we move farther away from 99, right, there'll be new inspirations. But they have inspired all the girls that followed in their footsteps on that U.S. national team.
A couple of years ago, maybe, around Christmas. And it was the pictures of the century or something like that. I don't even know. And Brandi, that picture was one of them. And it was on the cover of that publication. And Chad is the dad down the street. And he has two little girls in his family. And one night the doorbell rings and I answer it. And Chad knew what I did, but I never told him I took that picture. But, you know, it has my byline in that magazine. And he holds up the magazine. He says, "You took this picture?" I said, "Yeah, I did." And he said, "My girls had this hanging up in their room forever." And he talked and talked, and then he came back the next day and he had like 10 of those magazines, and he's going to give them all to their little teammates and whatnot.
And for Brandi?
Again, 99ers, I think Title IX. I think there's a women like Billie Jean King who have promoted women and women in sports unapologetically since the 70s. To say, hey, we're here, we're not going away, and we will help the landscape be better. We're not here to supplant you. We are here to stand beside you and to grow along with you and to, you know, make the garden more beautiful.
We fast forward to 5 or 7 years, something like that. And I was up in San Francisco covering a smaller college basketball tournament. And Brandi Chastain at the time was trying to break into television. And she was a reporter at this tournament. And Brandi was interviewing one of the coaches of one of the teams that was playing. And I thought, I've never met Brandi before. I should go and introduce myself. So I went over, she looks at me, she says, "Hi, how can I help you?" And I said, "Well, my name's Robert Beck. I'm the guy who took that Sports Illustrated cover." And Brandi just jumps on me and she wraps her arms around me and she's crying basically and almost kind of hysterical. And she said, "You know, Robert, you don't understand what that cover, what that picture meant to hundreds of thousands of women and little girls in our country and around the world." And I never thought in terms of that. And she was so emotional. Like I said, I mean, she was, and I never thought of it like that. You know, she said, "Look, girls now know that they can be athletes. Girls now know that they can be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They can be in your magazine. They can be just like everybody else." And I never thought of it in those terms. And it completely changed the way I look at that picture, the way I look at that cover. They were the first team. They were the first group of women that put the face of women into sports. And the impact is incredible.
The race to become the next president of the United States is on.
We can't drop the pace now.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Count on the BBC World Service to keep you informed on the latest breaking news. With insight and analysis you can trust.
Immigration, if you look at polls, a top concern for so many U.S. voters.
The issue of the economy reigns supreme for everybody.
For a global perspective on the U.S. election, search for The Global Story, The Documentary, and The Global News Podcast, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.